and gentlemen, please welcome co-CEO Kendall Roy.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Big shoes. Big shoes. big shoes. Big shoes.
Big shoes. Big hat. Big nervous breakdown.
P to the OD. Cast on the weekly about Succession. So many pods per week. See? P to the OD. Cast on the weekly about Succession. Podcasting like a pro, make some noise.
Houston, we have podcast. That's right, Succession Season 4, Episode 6, Living Plus is over. But we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. That's right, it's the Succession Podcast and Post Show Recaps, where we are breaking down the HBO show's final season, episode by episode, podcast by podcast. You can get commercial-free versions of the Succession Podcast when you sign up at patreon.com/postshowrecaps at any level. It's patreon.com/postshowrecaps at any level for ad-free versions of the Succession Podcast. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, and today we are discussing Succession Season 4, Episode 6, Living Plus. I am joined here by my co-pilots, Jess Sterling and Grace Leader. Big shoes, Jess. Big shoes, Grace. Big shoes.
Big shoes. Big shoes.
Big shoes.
I bet you're wondering where my words are going to come from tonight.
Uh-huh.
Big brain and also Pete.
You know, it's funny. It actually says here on my words that I'm happy to be here. And you know what? After a week off from the podcast, I kind of am. So Thanks, prompter.
You're not, Jess, he's not supposed to speak to the prompter.
He wasn't supposed to address the teleprompter.
Was I not supposed to talk to the prompter?
You're not supposed to talk to the prompter.
No. I'm
We
back.
Don't know why, you're just not supposed to.
Pizza, yeah. Pizza, Succession, so you know it's the authentic deal. Josh Wigler back in the house here, just in time to hawk some Living Plus your way. Thank you, Jess. Thank you, Grace. Thank you, Mike Bloom. Thank you, everybody who held down the fort, who held down the house, and even, I guess I did have the note that those weren't the clouds that I asked for on the podcast last
Rob
week.
Said you died, so.
Just threw him right under the bus screen.
Yeah.
No, I also said he died, but Rob said he died. So
those aren't the good news. That was a surprise episode 5 death for Josh Wigler.
Yeah, which was weird because we were working on Living Plus for you. It was so surprising. You didn't live forever.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'm very excited to offer our listeners a first chance at PSR Living Plus. It is going to be our new social media, physical social media, where we're all just going to get together in our separate homes and tune into postshowrecaps.com/YouTube and watch us break down episodes of TV live. It's going to add minutes to your life, probably actually take some away, if I'm being totally honest. But here we are to get it done. Really excited to crack back into Succession with after last week, which since I wasn't here, I'm going to say is the worst episode that ever aired on Succession. The only one I've never talked about now. No, it was terrific. This was really, really fun as well, Jess. The Roys go to Hollywood.
We're in LA, which is a new setting. LA brings out the absolute worst in Roman. Like, I hate, you know, I hate Cocky Kendall. It is on the record many a time on this podcast. I hate Cocky Kendall. Cocky Roman is just firing people.
Uh-huh.
And it's really awful because one of those people is Jerry, and you can't just fire Jerry.
Yeah, Grace.
I mean, it seems like he did, though, fire Jerry. And Kendall was like, I don't know. And then was like, I guess that's actually pretty cool. It's a cool move.
I have to say, I'm surprised. I was surprised by it in the moment. I'm gonna have to evaluate it. But I think that Kendall's reaction to first I fired Joy, and then I fired Jerry. Kendall's reaction to I fired Jerry is among the hardest I've ever laughed at this show.
Shiv's godmother.
It was not what I expected. It was like, you know what? F it. In the end, chopper in the end zone. This, you know, just like,
who are you going to fire next, me?
You're going to Carl, Frank, F and eat Greg and fire me too. Like, he's so in on it. He's just so hyped in at that
moment.
Well,
that's all Will needs too. It's terrible. These like the, Kendall hyping up a terrible, terrible Roman. It's not what we need. It's not what we need. Someone talks sense into these people.
Yes. Well, we've got a lot of sense that we're going to try and make out of this episode of Succession. Of course, this is just our first shot this week. We are live on YouTube, postshowrecaps.com/YouTube, with a big crowd, big crowd.
I've actually doubled those numbers.
We have doubled the numbers. Big crowd here tonight. postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. You can watch the video version of this on VOD if you wish. We are going to have the deep dive with Grace and Dr. Amanda coming next. That's going to be coming next on the Succession feed. Grace, who do we got? Anybody swinging in to talk about this one?
Asia Welch is going to join us to chat.
Very fun. A deep dive into the Pacific Ocean alongside Kendall Roy, perhaps. We're going to shake up the order of the podcast this week. I'm actually going to be talking with Rob a day earlier. I guess, you know, I haven't listened to the one that you and Rob did yet, Grace. Apparently I died.
You died. Yeah.
I'll have to catch up. I'll have to catch up and find out what happened there. So
Mike wanted to put you in a Dharma Initiative suit at the funeral.
Oh, that's a good idea. Actually.
Trying to carve out, Mike was trying to carve out down the hatch.
I caught that we were carving out DTH, which I am on board with for sure. Drive up the prices so Mattson can't take my precious Lost Rewatch podcast from me. I'm all in. All in on that plan. Then I'm going to get together with LaTanya Starks for Versus, which is going to be difficult because there's no new Yellow Jackets episode this week. So I don't know what LT and I are going to do, but we will have a Versus podcast for you this week. Then we will have the wrap-up show at the end of the week, once again on YouTube, postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to all the stuff. That's how you're going to find us each and every time we put out one of these podcasts. postshowrecaps.com/subscribe is just our subscriber hub if you want to see everything we've got going on right now. If you want just the Succession stuff, postshowrecaps.com/succession is the RSS link. But if you just want to search Post Show Recap Succession wherever you get your podcasts, that'll do too. We certainly appreciate any ratings, reviews, anything that you can do for us there. And as mentioned, the ad-free versions, if you sign up to be a patron at any level, that's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. At the $15 level, there is literally a thing called PSR Plus. You can look into it. Yeah. It's a whole thing. So we won't try and sell you on it right now. What I would like to do right now, Jess, is a quick plot recap. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
All right. It is season 4, episode 6, Living Plus, aka The Roys Go to Hollywood. It's investor day for Waystar Royco, and the biggest bit of business on the board involves one of the final initiative of Logan's Run. Living Plus, Waystar's brand turboed real estate communities, according to Kendall, or land cruises, as would-be Waystar buyer Lucas Mattson sees it. At best, Living Plus is a sanctuary, a physical social media, a groundbreaking bit of tech that will dramatically increase Waystar's value. At worst, it's an effing house, one that Mattson never wants to enter. As we know, Kendall and Roman couldn't give a Scooby-Doo what Mattson wants, so their team Price Rocket blasting off at the speed of light once again. They're trying to drive up the price of the sale so far beyond effing delicious it couldn't possibly go through. But the plan arcs in an explosive direction pretty quickly, with Kendall getting into too much birthday mode, demanding clouds and other theatrics for the Living Plus product launch, including a promise to live forever, and if not forever, then at least more forever. It's a lot. Meanwhile, Roman can't help himself from firing high-powered folks he probably shouldn't fire, including Jerry! No! As for Shiv, she's still finding her footing, especially as she discovers her brother's plan to tank the Gojo deal. She's taking time out of her day to cry, and between her scheduled grief sessions, she's shoring up allies. Not only Mattson, but Tom, who finally makes Shiv feel something thanks to a quick game of bitey. When the big day rolls around, Shiv convinces Roman that their elder brother is spiraling again. So the CE bros temporarily disband, with Kendall left alone to vouch for Living Plus in front of the investors. But Ken's not alone. He's on stage with his ghost dad doing a veritable John Hammond and Mr. DNA two-hander. The pitch goes over very well, certainly a lot better than Shiv and Roman feared. Not even Mattson's anti-Semitic memes are enough to tank Kendall's win. The episode ends with Roman in more doubt than ever, Shiv still posturing, but now with Tom at her side, and Kendall once again immersed in a body of water, except this time with his face all the way up. And Grace, that is what happened in Living Plus.
It's so fun. Last week when we pranked everyone, we were like, oh my God, we were so wrong about the deal not going through. And then actually the deal, I don't think it's going to go through. That was just a prank last week when we said we were wrong about our initial prediction of the deal not going through. I think that was my biggest surprise.
You were Scooby-Doing us on those predictions.
We were Scooby-Doing you. I guess my biggest surprise is that the Gojo deal is not final. I definitely thought last week's episode, Sad Plain Faces, was going to be... That's not the name of the episode.
It's a good band name, though.
Yeah.
That is like, okay, the deal's done, and now what's next? And it was like, no, actually, there's more to do to try and sabotage. The deal immediately comes up as Shiv realizes, also knows exactly what they're doing. And I really enjoyed this episode. I definitely wasn't sure if I was liking it at the beginning. I think partially because of that, of the... Okay, we're still kind of doing this thing. But I felt like as the show got along, I felt like this was a really good episode, specifically about these three individuals and what they all want. I think it was like very clarifying in terms of what these three people, how they're going to move forward in the wake of their father's death, which I think is still only a few days.
I mean, whether or not it's been a day an episode has been much litigated. It's certainly just been a few days, at least. It's just been a little while, Jess. You know, if it has been... Just every episode is basically a day. The jet lag.
They're flying. I know they all have PJs and everything.
The private jet lag is out of control.
Yeah. Regardless, it still hasn't been a ton of time removed since Logan died. So certainly, I agree with you.
By the way,
Greece.
Logan's dead, but also in this episode. How about that?
That was the beginning of the episode.
Shocked.
Yeah.
And as soon as you're as bad as my idiot kids, I was like, get him off my screen.
Valentine's Day card. It's nothing. It's fine. Good to see you, Dad. Good to see you, Dad.
But no, I do agree with you, Grace. Like, this was an episode that I felt like it built throughout the whole thing. Like, by the end, I was like, okay, I get it. Like, I liked seeing, because this felt like the first, like, these people they're businessing without their dad now, right? The first full episode of that actually happening. I also think it's a little jarring for us being in LA for the first time, right? We're getting all new kind of set pieces and different rooms. Like, we're not used to this setting, so it's a little bit jarring. But I do think, like, upon probably my multiple rewatches, I'll come to appreciate this episode for more, for just for what it gives us for each individual episode. And I find, personally, the Shiv and Tom stuff, like, the most compelling of the entire episode, because I need to watch every scene they've ever had together again, because they don't just say things to each other. They say things around and above and below each other. And I need, like, some kind of decoder wheel to, like, figure out what they're actually saying 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, it's funny because, Grace, I feel like Tom and Shiv typically, like, are sniping at each other sort of subtly. This time, they're literally just taking bites out of each other now. Yeah. So I know in the after the episode, Sarah Snook and Matthew McFadden are talking about how, the language is changing a little bit. First of all, they talk about the origins of Bitey, which apparently was one of the writers, or maybe it was the director. I don't remember. That it was a thing that they did with their siblings as kids.
So tracks.
Life influencing art and all of that stuff. But I think from Sarah Snook's perspective, certainly that things seem to be on a different playing field, and that she views Shiv as having always respected Tom as far as him being like an a-hole at his job. And now he's her a-hole, and that's exciting. We are live, right? Can't edit that out. Just keep it in. Keep it in.
I like the acting on the show, and I am compelled by the story. I hate that they're like once again hanging at the party. They're like, I really messed you up. I effed you up. It's like, no, you didn't mess me up. Like, I am all of you though, Tom. And I'm like, oh, this is so bad. And then they sleep together. And I'm like, no, I don't like any of this. I don't want this. My goal for everybody is just to be content. And I don't think Shiv and Tom being together makes either of them content by the end of this thing.
Yeah. Great note from Will, who is watching live. Will advises me to just edit the podcast and repost it and make it look like I said something else. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Could we build me a Living Plus house?
Uh-huh. As in?
Small, plywood, basic brickwork, nothing crazy. I could walk through it. ATN on here, face aging on the wall here. Maybe clouds appear above the house. What do you think?
We can definitely check with the team. Denny.
It's certainly an exciting vision.
But
don't say no, Denny. Don't say no.
This is for tomorrow?
Hollywood, though, right?
We need a house, practical build.
Here's the rule, okay? No one can say no. Yes, Kendall. Thank you, Kendall, for the cool new rule.
Thank you, Kendall.
Thank you, Kendall.
For the cool new rule.
Let's get deeper into the episode at this moment in time. Where should we begin? I feel like the big shoes, right? It's the big product launch of Living Plus is this big new idea that probably wasn't going to be like this really big idea. Certainly seemed just like Logan Roy was, almost resentful of having to hawk this thing to the masses. Who knows when this was filmed in terms of proximity to the time of his death, but probably relatively close. But Kendall, he's walking on the moon. We're moonwalking. Houston, we have liftoff. Houston, we have special, Jess.
Yeah, this does seem like just cruises, but for the land. Like
land
it does,
cruises.
It really does seem like what Mattson is saying it is, where it's exactly what we've seen from ATN in the past, which is they're out of date. They're out of touch with the modern world, right? Jerry says it. The future is tech, not ATN. And so getting Kendall to try to like jump through these logic hoops to like sell this thing and make it work, to make it fit with technology and overinflate these numbers with poor freaking Pete this whole time. I felt so bad for poor Pete this whole episode. He's just getting like harassed by Kendall about, can you just double the numbers? You're just like, yeah. but they're just numbers.
Pete does respond. He says, well, numbers are numbers. They're numbers.
Numbers aren't just numbers. Numbers are numbers.
They're numbers.
And like Kendall actually, I think, says like a salient thing. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, that doesn't make you're making it's gibberish.
Yeah.
And for Kendall to be the one who tells you that you're talking gibberish is a big problem. Yeah. But I guess maybe no one says no rule is currently in effect.
Yeah. Leave it to Kendall, though, to be able to sell this. Right. Like, for all the terrible things we can say about all of the Roy children and all the terrible things they do, Kendall does a really good job when he is like on stage, center of attention, trying to sell something. He is good with his words. He does know how to sell things. So as much as the like you referenced my favorite film of all time, Jurassic Park, as much as that like beginning with him like talking to the Logan on the screen was so uncomfortable and weird, and him saying, oh, I love you, Dad. I miss you, Dad. And that gave me the heebie-jeebies. The rest of it plays well.
Yeah. I was really on the edge of my seat. The moment that Shiv is able to convince Roman not to go forward with this, and perhaps even to go and talk to Kendall to protect him. We should protect him, is what Shiv says as she observes Kendall is careening. So a lot of manipulation happening here, but Roman backs down. Kendall has the grace, one of our favorite friends. Oh, man. It's literally what Kendall says. Goes, oh, man. It was supposed to be the thing.
Co-pilot jackets.
He's got the jackets. By the way, your jackets are in the mail, so get ready for that. That's very exciting. Yes. Coming your way later this year. Never. And so he is going to back down, and Kendall is going to be, like, you know, talked to in the way that he's talked to by Carl. The last time Kendall was off stage waiting in the wings for a big performance was Too Much Birthday, when he was about to go up and do the Billy Joel Honesty on a crucifix, and he backed down and we never got to see Tiny Wu-Tang. And I didn't know what was going to happen here. Was he going to back down? Was he going to get up there and spectacularly bomb? And I think that you can, even in the most the most successful read of Kendall, there's so much Kendall arrogance up there. He can't even get to the good stuff, like the authentically this is good stuff from Carolina and Hugo, without getting into like, last time I was up here, I was disrupting. Now I'm CEO, co-CEOs. What about that? You know, like there's some chest thumping about that. And even the member of the press who is like a good presentation, Kendall fist pumps. He comes back in. He can't help but be high on his own supply, as is Kendall's want. That being said, Grace, he did do the thing. He did the thing.
He did do it. I mean, everyone in the room really liked it. Carl is praising him. He always knew it. He always knew he was a smart kid.
I knew he was special. Yeah. Houston, we have special. It's just such an absurd line.
The writing is just so, the way that they just like make up language on this show, I think is like phenomenal. That's a great example of one. Yeah. I mean, he does, he does do it. I think there's another time where he backs out of an appear, which is not quite the same, but I think it's in, is it in season two when he's going to go on that late night show that's been
three.
Roasting him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Season three. Yeah. And then Schiff puts out the statement about him that is also three. Like, oh, we need to protect Kendall from himself. Like she always says this, but you know,
that's right. And he ultimately does not decide. He decides not to go on that show. So a couple times where he's like about to go do something and you're so worried it's going to go bad. And I feel like they set that up really well this episode where it's like, all right, like he's going to do it. This is going to go so bad. I think to the credit of the show, I actually thought it was quite clever to never really explain what Living Plus was, because I found it very confusing. It was like real estate and entertainment and all this stuff. And then once you actually see Kendall's pitch, I'm kind of like, oh, it's not as bad as I thought. It's not as like weird and out
there.
He's pitching
like a moon colony, right? Like he's pitching a colony on the moon, but in Colorado and states and stuff. And basically like, you know, these live-in communities where you're not going to need the police. You're not going to need your keys. Everything's going to be super safe. You're going to have high quality entertainment because Waystar has the huge library. I need to go back and look at all of the different posters.
Morons, a Dodrick and Friends is coming out.
Dodrick was back.
We love to see it.
Referenced multiple times this episode.
You know, Waystar's huge content library, so they're going to have access to that. Cast members might come through. Directors might as well. You know, he's going to give you access. He's going to give you live ATN debates. But the big kicker, the whole, like, live forever thing, is this sort of, like, lizard person, elite, rich, vampiric, Walt Disney is cryo-frozen himself type stuff of, like, you're going to have that premium access to this fabled tech. Tech is coming. Tech is here. And medical advancements are ridiculous and are only getting more advanced. And I think like the snake oil pitching of that to some degree, to an extent, I think you can imagine Kendall believing in it too. So there's a little bit of like you're believing in the guy who's believing in the bullshit. But he sells a thing that doesn't sound as intensely futuristic as it would have sounded 20, 30 years ago. And it surprises everybody in the room. It surprises absolutely everybody. It's nothing that they can really deliver on, and it's not really going to be of the value that he's aiming to rocket the price on, but he sells it well. It seems to go over
really
well.
But that's what they need, is they need the price to just go high enough to basically say, we don't need Mattson, right? It's the same exact thing where Logan wants to make them too big to bear hug, so that Kendall can't bear hug them. It's literally the same maneuver. They're trying to make themselves overinflated so Mattson can't bear hug them. And it's
your greatest tormentor can be your greatest teacher, Jess, I heard.
And this time we have basically Shiv as the rat on the outside whispering into Matson's ear about all of this, about, oh, you know, what's going, you know, Mattson doesn't like this, what's going on, so he has to do something about it. Turns out tweeting a Nazi joke is a great move to interrupt things. Dodrick was involved. I need to pause my screen next time I watch, but
Dodrick did not need to get dragged into the Nazi propaganda. I have to tell you, that was bad.
The line is like work until you're free, essentially. Like it's about concentration camp. So and this is sending Dodrick. The idea is that these Living Plus homes are concentration camp. It's pretty bad.
That's what he's really what bad. He's effectively saying. And here in the chat, we've got this from Belle, who is watching us live, and Belle says Kendall the MVP, great white knuckle performance, mature handling on Mattson. And I really was struck by the way that he reacts to it. You know, like the whole thing is messy and gross and terrible, but the first, like the icebreaker, the immediate, I know what the quote is. He doesn't need it explained to him because Kendall is like well-read enough to understand that. Kendall looks at it. First response, well, I'm not going to fave it. It's just, you know, is unreal. And I do think that he is able to stand up to Mattson in a way because his dad is literally at his back, right? Yeah. You know, he is channeling Logan Roy in this moment. And the only way out of this is through this pitch. He has to go all the way through it. So Mattson ends up looking pretty foolish. I think he takes the tweet down and everything in record time.
Hugo, can I see it? It's gone, Hugo. It's deleted, you idiot.
Really, really funny. Very funny there.
The other piece of this, right, is like it's not. So it's about driving up the Living Plus is to drive up the price of the stock. to push it over 192, they're pretty confident that pretty much anything over 192, like 192 is Mattson's ceiling. The other piece of this that came up last week, it was pretty quick, is that half of what they're going to get out of the sale comes back in stock. And so part of the pitch with the confidential meeting at the beginning of the episode is like, also, if we're going to sell this guy and we're keeping a bunch of our stock, do we want this guy running the company where our stock is gonna, that's where the value right. is. And they're mm-hmm. like, no, it's baked in. It's better if he's a genius. And I feel like, yeah, this the end yeah. of the episode is to like reaffirm that as well. That like,
yeah,
that's also not good. Like, this guy should not be probably running.
Well, he ended up baiting, probably not even intentionally. This is like a totally unintended side effect that he ends up goading Mattson into exhibiting exactly what he said at the start of the episode, Jess. That like Mattson's not somebody who understands our culture. Is this somebody who we can actually recommend? Can they recommend somebody who's just out here making Nazi jokes? Well, I mean, depending on who wins the presidential election in the universe of Succession, it might not be a problem at all.
Right.
But, you know, this might not be a great look either.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is what they're saying about Mattson isn't incorrect in that he is erratic. We saw that last season when they had, again, remember he was tweeting when they were at the Roy Kidd's mom's wedding. They were having like issues with him and his erratic tweets. So what they're saying about it is
you're gonna have to figure out how to get the border or the blood across the border to Canada.
That's tough. Yeah,
it's so tough.
Yeah, it's hard. I've been trying to send leaders for a while. Yeah,
leaders to leaders. But what they're saying about him is incorrect. It's just obviously they're completely misrepresenting what happened up on the mountain between themselves and Mattson. But I did love this quote from Jerry of his reputation is priced in.
Yeah,
that is like so fantastic and like true about like not just this world but our world.
Yeah, it's really chilling. Work. Yeah,
it's mm-hmm. really awful, but it's so true. And yeah, it's funny how that ends up working, that Mattson does exactly what, again, they unintentionally bait him into doing it. They don't know that's what they're doing. But I mean, I'm really excited for all of this because I feel like Mattson angry is going to give shades of Logan. And now that we have each of the Roy children attempting to embody their father in different ways, it's going to be like Logan v. Logan coming up. So that's going to be really interesting.
So I want to gauge both of you on the other CEO, the other CE bro in this episode, Roman, who is firing people. He death to joy.
Mostly women.
Yep, he's
one of which he sent DPs to. Mm-hmm. So
yes, I think it was on all of our minds that maybe firing Jerry like that, potentially.
Listen, I'm no feminist, but
you know, potentially catastrophic. So that's not particularly good. But we saw in Kill List, you know, Roman have this real moment of deterioration when he goes up against Mattson. He even says, like, I'm dead, I'm gone. And maybe you believe that after you watch the way he is running his side of the company. Even if Kendall is supportive of Roman and his moves, it does seem to me, Grace, that Roman is really off tilt. How are you feeling? Hard to feel positive about Rome in this episode, even if there has never been a more tear-jerking, emotional delivery of the words micro dick, I think, ever in the history of any.
I completely agree. I mean, I don't, again, the show, the trick of this show is that I'm like watching him be a bad CEO. He's being the thing he can't do, like between firing Joy and Jerry and then ultimately backing away from presenting with Kendall, watching it be an out and out home run, a grand slam. And he just has to sit and he's watching it. And then he walks away dejected and he listens to the conversation of his father insulting him. Being insulted is not, you get in some weird territory, but like that's what he got. That's how he built his relationship with Jerry. He's like romantic relationship with Jerry. It was like tear me down, right? Like the scene
slime puppy.
Yeah. So this is like a common occurrence, I think, with Roman it's like tragic. Also recognizing that he's doing awful things. He's firing the woman who he sent dick pics to. He's also. It's reaffirming his own beliefs about all these times where he, like when Logan is going to step back and he's picking a CEO and he's about to name Roman and Roman calls him and is like, I think I can do it. But also if it's not me, I think, you know, some time under the mother hen, and immediately Logan hangs up and is like, it's not Roman. It's not Roman. And so there's all these times where he's like so close to like being able to do it. And he just like seems to, you know, mess it up. And then him just listening to the deep fake from his father on the phone.
Terrible.
Terribly. I do feel bad for the driver, I think, the most, who just has to listen
listening to this.
A son listen to their father tell them that they have a micro.
Yeah, I think the thing is like this. I mean, this is how I read that final scene with Roman is like, he's listening into it because he like misses his father's voice.
Yes.
And like, this is something his father would have said about him to him straight to his face, right? Like all of these things are like abuses and insults that Logan would routinely hurl in Roman's direction, let alone the physical abuse. So it very much seems to me like obviously Roman hasn't properly grieved. We all know that. It's been like five days.
Other scene that I thought was really fascinating when they're talking about death and he's like, yeah, it's just one size fits all. Like I just wasn't ready for it. I thought this was really
undead to die.
Yeah, it's very undead to die. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just wasn't. And he's like, he's struggling to even say this. Like he really struggles to be emotionally vulnerable with anybody, and he always undercuts it with humor. I don't know why anybody would do that. And it's just like, it's really tough to watch him go through that. And at the same exact time, he is so badly trying to embody the CEO that he thinks his father was, but doing it in such a like, it really does feel like what Matson said, right? Like they're imposters. They're just like imitations of their dad in this moment. And it hurt him to the core, Josh, when he says, Jerry, like, I need you to just believe that I can be my dad. And she says, say it or believe it. And it's like,
scene is so good. It's like, you're a weak monarch during an interim, I think is what she says. Says it's something my dad would have done. She says, you're not your dad. And then she immediately regrets it. And they talk over each other. And she says, you're in a more complicated position. And he says at the same time, I'm what's left. It's brutal.
Yeah. I want to give props to my colleague at The Hollywood Reporter, Jackie Strauss, who has the Succession coverage wheel this week. She did a really great sprawling interview with Loren Scafaria, who is the director of this one, who also directed Honeymoon States, who also directed Too Much Birthday, really a Kendall Roy trilogy as they get into in the interview. It's a big interview. It's a really juicy read. And I think you should check it out if you like all of this stuff and the behind the scenesy of it all. But specifically that final scene the episode for Roman, I thought that there was some really interesting perspective on that from the director. So this is what she said. The scene in the car at the end with Roman listening to that edited video is my absolute favorite in an episode with a ton of brilliant scenes. Seeing everything flash across his face in rapid succession. He knows it's funny at first because he's funny, but then the pain of it just seeps in. And then when he's holding the phone up to his ear, ugh, thinking about it now, I'm physically sick. Kieran is such a special actor. He brings so much vulnerability and sensitivity and pain. It's a very familiar feeling for me because after you lose somebody, there are no new pictures. There are no new photos or voicemails. So in this weird way, even getting a doctored version of your dad talking shit, saying this about you, you can't help but want to hear it. You can't help but want to hear his voice say something new. I thought that was a really wonderful perspective on that final scene where, that is one that unless there's, I mean, there's still four episodes to go. Kieran Culkin has a lot of room to really make us weep. But that was justification for his submission to the lead actor category.
Might be the last thing that Logan now actually says on the show.
Oh my gosh.
Like if he's not in any more episodes. The other one I want to give Roman credit for this episode is he gives us, on the Mount Rushmore of like awkward sitting positions, which he's holding
a
full couch cushion as he's watching Kendall deliver the
excellent
speech. He's like protecting himself from what is happening. He's like, I need a shield and a bear. Like,
can you imagine if he had been up there? What would that have even been like?
Just hunched over.
No,
he would have just been like standing awkwardly in the corner. Like,
also, no house, eh? On this stage.
No house. They axed the house. Yeah. No house, no clouds. Just acoustic set is what we went with. Acoustic set.
You want to play Bitey?
Bitey?
We never played Bitey?
No.
Oh. Okay. Well, you bite me, I bite you. See who can take it.
Okay, sure.
Give me your arm.
let's play Bitey. Let's talk about Tom and Shiv. Let's sink our teeth into what's going on with Shiv and Tom. Jess, I'm going to give you the rule on this one. You get to bite first.
Yeah, they're so flirty, right? Like, they are
well,
so
yeah,
flirty.
They're doing it, you know? They're just yeah, going well, back no, I'm, yeah,
I'm flirty just in the way that they fully...
They fully have sex, but like
yeah, they're flirting, and then they, you know,
just their energy though, like the energy, right? Like they have this very like cat and mouse routine that they're playing right now. Except, even though Shiv is positioned ahead above Tom right now, which is why she feels
amazing.
which is why she feels like it's okay to punch down. Like they, it does feel like they're finally kind of combating each other equally, if that makes sense, right? Like where when they play Bitey, Tom bites her hard and she pulls away first and she's surprised that he's willing to go that far. And I felt like the conversation between them in the bedroom, this is the second bedroom talk, their pillow talk leaves a lot to be desired. But they, this is the second time they've been in a bedroom together and they've had these conversations where I have felt like, wow, even though they're talking in riddles, it's the most honest they've been with each other, where he says, like, yeah, I like my money, but you do too. Go ahead. Throw away all your stuff for love. I don't see you doing that. Let's go run away to an island together. And she, like, they start laughing. And you do get the feeling that she's like,
I'd go anywhere for love with you, Tom Wamsgans.
Tom Wamsgans. Yeah. I need to know, because this is, I said this earlier this season on the podcast. I said they keep bringing up Shiv's past and why it was that they got together originally. She was going through a quote unquote tough time. She brings up TK, the Washington situation.
Yeah.
I need the, I'm dying. I need the details.
Yeah, TK, a journalistic term, is in to be determined later, effectively.
Oh,
so,
that's very funny.
You know, sort of a placeholder. So maybe that was just like left in the script. They meant to name the character and they just kept it as TK Grace. It's possible. Yeah.
That's very funny. The thing is, they are equally, you know, insulting each other, but it's so mean. It's for me, it's as mean as their sex, their dirty talk before the wedding. Is that last season? Where she starts like being so mean to him. He's saying like, sorry for effing you up. You know, you should be so lucky. You hardly scratched the surface. I was effed up for a long time before I met you. You were the one after the actual one. He says, I got my chisel in you. And she says, yeah, you're the whole, I'm the whole story for you. That she spells. Oh. It's so.
But what about Mary? There's something about Mary.
Yeah, but you didn't have a taste of the dark meat before you had me.
Wow.
It's so mean. It's so mean. I don't want them to be together. But also, like.
But this is them. Like this. This is. This is.
Yeah, I know.
In my opinion, right? Like, this is where we are with them, and it makes sense because Tom has betrayed Shiv in like a very big way, and so finally he's like. He feels like I can be mean too. If she wants to play this game, I can be mean back. Even though we see when she's calling Mattson, he's in the room. I will say he is in the room, but he has his feet on the desk. Like he's very comfortable. He is not feeling like he is. He's not her Greg. You know what I mean? Like there is a feeling of like a partnership there. And this is just the game that they play with one another. And I think the only way the game is going to be broken is ultimately when Tom finds out that she's pregnant. I don't know that how else this game gets broken.
Interesting. I would think that if they are now sort of like closer and back together, that might be good. Ultimately, you think that this is going to go over poorly whenever Tom finds about her pregnancy?
I think the problem is that I don't think Shiv knows how she feels about the pregnancy.
Right.
So I don't know that like.
I
don't know how that Tom is going to be very excited, I think. And so I just don't know that Shiv's reaction is going to be what he wants to see, considering she's compartmentalizing her grief. She's scheduling her time to cry about her grief. Like she's not emotionally ready to handle the pregnancy. And so I just think that like her reaction and Tom's reactions are going to be so vastly different. He might come on way too strong about it being so excited. And she might immediately back off like she's done before.
The other piece I think it's really interesting is at the end of last episode when Shiv sort of like, is like, you want to grab lunch and see me? And we were really speculating on why she does that. What is she feeling herself after having a big win sort of with Mattson? But then, you know, in typical Succession fashion, if you're like, if you're the one smiling at the end of the episode, it might not be great for you, you know, moving forward. And we see that this episode that it, you know, once again, we end the episode without really knowing what's going to happen with the deal. But it kind of seems now like the price is going to go up and maybe they're unsure of whether Mattson should run this company. And that doesn't bode well for the deal. And that feels like it doesn't bode well for Shiv, because Shiv, what position is she? They talk about like not wanting to have three CEOs. They're going to give Shiv something, but again, they all want just the CEO job. So what does that leave Shiv? And Shiv, he has Tom in her corner. What does that leave Tom? Like basically where he is essentially, right? So that doesn't feel great, I think, in terms of like, yes, they're like, we're riding some highs, but then they're on kind of the, like, you know, when we rate our Roys, I feel like they're on that, the poor end of what's happening at the moment with like the way Star Royco.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really does depend on the Mattson of it all and what are the consequences of the price rocket that seems to have taken off. And we know that rockets on Succession have a habit of exploding.
I mean, real life too, you know? So.
Yeah, uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yeah, with, you know, with a Mattson-type figure, yeah. Perhaps even. So hard to say, but I thought that this was a really excellent episode for Sarah Snook and Matthew McFadyen. Just really tremendous stuff for the two of them. I think a really satisfying episode as somebody who's invested in those two characters together. Mm-hmm. Again, yep. This is a roller coaster ride and we don't know where it's going to go. But I think that the season has been so tightly plotted. And even with just, you know, five episodes leading up to this sixth moment of how they handled the fallout of Tuscany and Tom's betrayal, and even going mm-hmm. into the reconciliation such that it was in this episode, I think felt really honest and measured and paced really, really, really well. And ultimately, when we got there, not only was it really excellently written, but the acting was just off the charts. So the Tom and Shiv stuff was, it was magnetic this episode.
This is
impossible to look away from.
Yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. And I think I'm waiting for even more, obviously, with the pregnancy reveal and everything. But like, this is what I love the timing of it. I feel like six episodes in, we were due for this. We needed to see Shiv and Tom have some sort of conversation because they really haven't beyond the very beginning of the season. Where it ended. It was over, but it was all shoved to the side. They weren't addressing anything. I still think we're gonna get something where they actually speak very true words to each other that are very even more hurtful than these ones are, where they're not playing this game in public, where they're actually having it out.
Yeah.
I think we're bound to see it. But it did make sense to me also that the moment where Shiv is slightly vulnerable with Tom and like the moment they do first kiss is after she's had this like compartmentalized moment of grief where like, yeah, she's a little bit more vulnerable right then. And he is saying the right things to kind of get her to take her guard down like ever so slightly and trying to be there for her, like physically and emotionally trying to be there for her. So I really thought that was all very well done as well, especially the like the camera angles and everything of like where she's placing her hands, where his hands, I really thought it was well done.
Yeah. When she like grabs his head and like, oh, I know where this is going. They did a great job.
They debrief their intercourse. He says nice. And she says nice. And he says very nice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then she says a very nice.
I thought
was really good.
Yeah.
Grace, where are we with the 3B? By the end of this episode, because I think it's very clear that Shiv has moved into wartime positions and has, you know, she pulled Roman in to take away from Kendall because of Mattson. They did huggy time. They did the huggy thing.
And Roman was the one who suggested it. And it's just like, ugh, I hate Roman and I love Roman all at the same time. And it's so frustrating.
He suggested it. He is, you know, constantly between like a rock and a hard place. And I think in this episode, he believes in Kendall's words, if not Kendall's numbers. And then he goes with Shiv. And when the thing goes well, I think that the way that the camera's so tight on Kieran Culkin, it reads to me as, I should have been up there. I messed up.
Yeah.
I should have believed in him. But then when Kendall comes back and just the arrogance on display, like, this is not a man who's upset about dad is sort of the way that I read that from Roman. So Roman is still sort of like in that spot. But Kendall, I think, Jess, is blind to the simmering resentments that seem to be certainly like close to boiling with Shiv. And I think with Roman, it's simmering. I think Kendall thinks that everything's going great. He's got the third eye. He did the two and the one. He could see it all. I could see the whole thing. He's plugged into the matrix, but not really.
Yeah. Can I say, Jess, just before that, yeah, the three B is, but he writes one in the sand is what he writes in the sand before he dives into the water.
His daddy's number one boy.
He's
number one boy.
Yeah, it's so obvious. Kendall has never been someone who is like picking up on those clues, right? Especially when he gets, as someone who gets a bit obsessive about things, I understand Kendall at that core level where he is so like misses everything with these blinders on for projects that he's working on, and he cannot see. First of all, the fact that he thinks that they can get anything over on Shiv is like, come on now, my guy, like, what are you doing? And then second of all, to like miss that what Roman really wants is like all three of them to work together. And Kendall keeps making that so difficult by coming up with these ridiculous plans, by shoving Shiv to the side. And then also, when you and Roman are having this like unspoken agreement, or maybe a spoken agreement of like, hey, we're not going to tell Shiv what actually happens up on there, and the first chance you get, you throw Roman under the bus, like, you're not winning any favors with anybody here. So it does feel like in this episode, we do get like a little bit of a like a Shiv is pulling Roman back to her side, right? She is literally like crouched above his shoulder, like whispering about Kendall in his ear. And oh, I'm really worried about him. He could say anything up there.
Problem for Roman right now is he has two devils on his shoulders.
Yeah, true.
You know, he doesn't have any like good angels to lean into right now.
Yeah.
Earlier in the season, as the we cut to the first episode, like immediately as the season starts, and the siblings are working together, and everyone's like, oh, interesting, you know? And I feel like it was like, but that won't last very long.
Right.
And it is like falling apart. And I the optimist in me is just like, it's holding on by a thread because the thread will survive to the end. Like, they'll figure out that this is all this whole thing is BS, that they, you know, they're siblings, they should do that. And then my brain is like, no, that's wrong. They're just like waiting for the end of the season for it to finally snap. And I think the point that like Kendall is fun, but I do think like, what is the ending for Kendall? I think again, it's one of these two things. It's either, for me, it is, he becomes Logan and then realizes like, well, for how unsatisfying your life is going to be. Logan is a man who was like, you know, cheating on his wife, yelling at the news organization that he built like on one of his last nights ever alive. Like, who cares? And that's like the like most depressing version, or the version is that like Kendall is so close to becoming Logan before he realizes like, I should not be trying to do this. I don't know which one.
He becomes Logan and fails. And so, gosh, right. You know, that's the right. Worst outcome.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I actually don't think that the idea of, you know, you're hanging on to hope by a thread, right? It's a tightrope walk on the razor, 500-foot reputational plummet. But I feel like there is, they have held on this long. To the degree that they have held on, it is not out of the realm of possibility for me that they are able to like rally together against Mattson. It doesn't feel terribly likely to me ultimately, but I don't think it's, you know, an insane take. I don't think that it's like a totally big out of left field thing for something like that to ultimately happen. So hang on to the optimism, even if it's just a shred.
What Philly's saying in the chat, like gets what I'm saying, but like, yeah, the huggy thing.
Yeah,
like,
what Rich is saying for the people listening, Rich is in the chat. Rich says, I feel what Grace is saying, but gosh, the huggy thing they keep doing, it's losing power every episode. It's true. It's draining. It is. It's starting to drain, the huggy thing.
You see Shiv's face too, and she's being hugged of like, wow, this is so fake. Like, come on.
Yeah. 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 It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough. Let's take some more questions from folks here as we're kicking things down towards the end. This is from a procrastinating law student who is written in. Better ways to mind your time, procrastinating law student, than listening to post-show recaps. I'm interested in your thoughts on the dynamic between the Greyheads and the kids. The kids thought they could assume Logan's role, and the Greyheads are resistant. There is this moment in the hallway, Jess, with Carl.
So good.
I mean, Carl is, you know.
I know a thing about a thing. What does he say?
Yeah,
I know a thing or two about a thing or two.
CFO of major corporations for over two decades, you know, and he is, talking about vice grips and things and hands and such. And I know Mike was really talking about Carl sneaking up as a favorite character of his this season. Carl's having a heck of a season, but in that moment in the hallway where he's really ripping into Kendall, Jess, by the end of it, here he is just, you know, sucking kneecaps, as it were, with the whole, you know, I know special and this guy is special. Houston, we have special.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have Jerry standing up to Roman. We have Carl standing up to Kendall. We don't see a ton of Frank this episode, but it does feel like they're without Logan there. They're not as afraid of the Roy children, right? They know their weaknesses. They've seen them literally grow up. And I think that is so, the dynamic is so vastly different. And Carl saying like, I will squeal. I was just like, so shades of Boar on the Floor, but in a very different way.
Yeah. He's came big at this point.
Yeah, I loved this. I thought this was really fun. And of course, Carl, being the schmuck that he is, immediately is like, oh, he's a special boy, right after it goes well. So, yeah, I think that of the three of them, we all know Jerry has the stiffest backbone. So my money's on Jerry for actually being the one who ends up in a good position and also being willing to stand her ground the most, especially
despite having
considering...
been fired, which, you know,
well,
was,
last
she
episode...
really, was she really? Yeah.
Eba says, I'll either put it in my book or I will sue them for money when I get fired in this episode. Jerry,
she got
fired.
Literally has the DPs, so she has the power.
Oh, God, yeah. I hope it's not a picture book.
Carl says that they have their D's in each other's hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got, you got my DP on your phone, but I've got your DP on mine. This is from Belle. Belle says, refreshing to see Kendall speak with detail and authority and not slangs and biz slogans. What do you think about that, Jess? That's in contrast, I think, to some of the other takes about Kendall in this episode from Robin. We were robbed of Kendall singing.
He's on a stage, people. Uh-huh. Come on.
You know, Kendall goes up on a stage and Kendall is singing. Scott had said, really was hoping for that L to the IV rap from Ken in this episode. It's a rep. Living Plus.
I missed opportunities, of course. I will say we still get a lot of business jargon from Kendall. It just wasn't happening when he was on the stage. When he tells, literally, because you can, okay. Roman is trying to be Logan, but like pulling from Kendall to do so, because Kendall is the one who tells Roman like, oh, tell him you want to get it pumping. And Roman literally says that exact phrase to Joy in their meeting. Mm-hmm. So he's still saying these jargony nonsense things. It's just not luckily when he's on stage.
Yeah, when he says, get the franchise pumping, shoot it to the moon. And then Roman says, who wants to F? We're in Effiewood.
Yes. And when you go and you look at Jess Jordan's face afterwards, priceless. Go back, rewatch that scene. Jess being in the room and absorbing all of that. Incredible eye acting. One of the best Jess faces in the show, I think, was in that scene. Very, very good. You got to go back and check it out. Let's keep talking about Roman. We've got this from Nomis. Roman's going to have a breakdown if he doesn't process his father's death properly. It certainly seems like we are arcing in that direction. And some people are so concerned, Grace. This is from JS saying, Roman is going to die one way or another, whether literally or metaphorically. Is there a Roman death pool that we need to be looking into at this moment in time? Should we be that level of concern for Roman, or is it going to be some sort of figurative death that we should be more concerned about?
I mean, for anybody, I definitely can see at least one of the siblings having the death, you know, or their ending being that they walk away from the whole thing. They're ultimately deciding that being the CEO of Waystar Royco or whatever their dad would run in lieu of not being able to run Waystar Royco like ATN or Pierce, then that's the out and the death. But I don't know if I see that as a death, more of a freedom. I mean, I was I was not super in, and Rob had a very funny reaction to talking about, there was a lot of SEC violation talk about whether Roman would get in trouble with the SEC violation. I don't think that that is happening at all, but now that he has fired Jerry, I am kind of worried about something legal coming back Roman's way, and him actually just like being fired and not choosing to leave, but being fired, I feel like would be another like devastating blow for Roman.
Yeah, you could imagine Kendall doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, and he could kill Roman. He could kill Roman, and then he's sole CEO. And then how do you, dethrone Kendall Roy? Maybe you throw out the murder allegations. I don't know. There's some mutually assured destruction between the siblings, so everybody's got to play carefully. And that's why it's hard to imagine how either they don't all stick together or they don't all just like atomize each other. Like, right. How do they not just get eviscerated is the other thing. Will is writing in, Jess, I think Roman is more likely to have a career death is Will's take.
I think that I could see that. Yeah. So my prediction is more of Kendall feels to me most likely to have the most unhappy ending just because we have the cater waiter stuff hanging out there, just wanting to be resolved. But Roman feels when you see he can't do this job without his dad leading him or Kendall leading him or Shiv pulling him in one direction. He has decent instincts, but he doesn't have the confidence to back them up. And he's never willing to like take a stand against something on his own.
Yeah.
So to me, I think I think he's bound for destruction in terms of his career. I don't really see him having a future at a high level of a corporation beyond this season.
Xanalore in the chat, let's enlarge. Xanalore says, I saw Roman's confrontation / firings as a continuation of his unloading on Mattson. He will be disrespected by his father over and over on replay, but by no one else. Another interesting Roman observation, I think, from a procrastinating law student once again, is the scene of Roman in the failed rocket launch foreshadows how he reacts in positions of power. He's avoidant and retaliatory. I think that this episode, unfortunately, is like bearing out a lot of the worst things about Roman Roy, even as, you know, your sympathy well, I think, goes out to him, especially with that final scene.
But then I'm like, yeah, but the sad episode came in episode 6. So maybe there's good things to come for Roman because he ends this episode on such a downer.
I don't think this season plays by those rules at this point. I just feel like it's like on its own schedule.
We were Shiv was like on top. We were like, Shiv, girl boss Shiv last week. This week is not very good for Shiv.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Every episode, a new adventure from the Fisher Protocol. Speak in my language. It's almost like they could live together or die alone. Swish, forgive me, says the Fisher Protocol. With that, how do we not end on a Lost reference? So I think we got to call it there. Of course, this is just the first shot at Living Plus. I love how he says it. Living Plus is a great moment from Kendall Roy. This is just the first shot at the episode. The deep dive is coming next. You can look out for that to be late Monday, early Tuesday. Then we're going to get into some shenanigans with Rob. I shall resurrect myself. I will come back from the dead and hopefully really freak him out. That should be pretty fun. Somehow, some way, a versus podcast with LaTanya. Probably going to be pretty succession heavy, but we will bake some Yellow Jackets into it as well, because I didn't talk about episode 5 actually, so I do have some takes about episode 5 of Yellow Jackets, so we'll definitely be able to have the conversation there. Then the wrap-up show on Friday, postshowrecaps.com/YouTube if you want to watch it live. I think it'll be in the afternoon East Coast time this Friday, and then it's going to start all over again as we are entering the final 4 episodes of Succession ever. Only 4 on the floor left, Jess Sterling, and then it's over.
Makes me so sad.
Unless we subscribe Succession to Living Plus, and then it'll live forever.
Yeah, I think Succession Plus I would sign on to. Just like a bunch of additional shitty seasons. Fine, whatever.
Give me like Frank and Carl. Give me the Frank and Carl stuff.
Yeah, how bad could it be? How bad could it be? Of course, if you want to make sure that you are checking in on all of those podcasts, you want to be subscribed. PostshowRecaps.com/Succession is the RSS link. When you search by URL, you can also just search Postshow Recap Succession wherever you get your podcasts. If you got some time, ratings and reviews, we greatly appreciate those as well. If you want to get the ad-free versions of the podcast, again, that's Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You can sign up at any level. You'll get commercial free podcasts for all of the Succession final season coverage. And at $15, there is PSR Plus. And I will spend the week figuring out what PSR Living Plus actually is. I feel like that's coming up on the Rob Show for sure. Anything else, Grace, about this episode?
There's some Greg content in there. That's pretty, we didn't talk about Greg pretty much at all. I did like him constantly. Like,
he didn't get in trouble.
He was revealing to Tom that his presentation was bad. He's playing the role of robot pretty well.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Greg Matt 4000, Jess, that was pretty fun. We liked that.
Yeah, that was great. We got more Kendall and water stuff at the very end of the episode. That felt very big. So
yeah,
I'm...
one last question. DM Philly is proxying for Prez, who had asked if we just saw Kendall baptize himself as the CEO at the end.
Yeah, he's the number one boy. I think he feels like, I did it. I'm Logan. I finally am where I belong.
Yeah.
I feel like he was washing off the weight of his father. He's like, I actually was like good at a thing. My dad couldn't be mad at me. I'm like washing that away.
Or the weight of, or the smell of the very big shoes.
That's true.
Big shoes. Big
well, that's, and Matt wasn't wearing any shoes. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yoo-hoo is what he said as he got onto the airplane.
The kiss goodbye, the air blowing the kiss.
Yeah.
Such a choice.
Gross, gross. All right, folks. I'm at Round Howard, wherever you can find me. Grace, where are you?
At High from Grace.
And Jess.
At the Jess Sterling.
All right, folks. We will be back with more Succession coming next in the Succession podcast feed. Until then, everybody. I was going to just say take care, but I really should do a round of FM!
D to the OD. Cast on the weekly about Succession.